You are listening to a sermon series from Open Door Fellowship Church.
It's fantastic. So we have some folks here who are doing the wonderful hard works of love in other states. And I know there's a lot of people gone for a spring break. There were last week and this week and probably be the next week, but hopefully they'll be back on Easter. I just wanted to, I can't see all of you, but I know that there are some from Tulsa here, the Houstons and probably Hutzels are around and here, and hi Jeff, and some from Turlock. I saw the Dirksons earlier, there we go, and some others, and Dravecki's are back in there, that's great, and some from Kentucky, where are we, there's Kentucky right there, the Krauses and the Hunts, lots of, anybody I'm missing out there? Okay, well, we welcome you, and we welcome each of you who may be just visiting today. And whether we are, this is the first time here today, or whether we've called this place home for a lot of years, we all long for an authentic, safe place where we can be known and trusted and loved, and where we can have a sense of longevity, of someone's going to stick with us and going to love us that way. The original safe place began a long time ago in a land far away with the Father and the Son and the Spirit of God living and loving and leading together in a place they call the throne room of grace. And in Hebrews 4, they invite us to be a part of that and to live and love and lead in that very same way. And so when we think about this true face really just has one heart desire, and that's to see that there will be millions of high trust communities of grace multiplied around the world. And so we're not doing this on our own. You saw all the folks from California and Kentucky and Oklahoma, they're doing all the rest of it. And we just really are grateful to be a part of a movement of people that the Spirit of God is calling out in this century to have a reformation of sanctification by grace through faith. So you know now that the first community of grace was three, right? So a high trust community of grace for us at True Face could be a family, a team, a business, a marriage, a school, a university, could be a nation, could be a political team, even a political team, although that would take more come to Jesus meetings than the rest of them.
You can help yourself.
No, yes, it's the season. But this is the reason why we just do one thing every day, all day long, and that's that we help people learn, as it says at the very bottom of the program there on your front page, we help them learn how to trust God and others with themselves. And that's all we do. It's the gate to everything that we do. It's very simple and very hard and very profound. And it is our definition of humility. And you realize that when God says that he loves to give grace to the humble, and if at the very core of humility is learning to trust God and others with me, then you realize you can connect the dots. You realize that when God's grace gets loose in your life, all bets are off. Anything can happen. We believe grace changes everything. And so you can't tell what amount of healing and reconciling and restoring and empowering and influence he's going to drive through your life. It is phenomenal. So you shouldn't even forecast it because you don't know what's going to happen. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. When we first make that step of humility, I made it just as I was coming into my teens. That's the first time I trusted Jesus. God did exactly what he said he'd do. He loaded me up with grace. He put Jesus in my life forever and the Spirit in my life forever. And he gave me a full premium pass to his family. And it's never changed. And so in this way, there may be some of you who would identify with me. And you might come to trust Jesus for the first time this morning. That would be amazing. That is why they call it amazing grace. So among these thousands of high trust communities of grace around the world. We just want to give you two samples today, okay? Just two samples that will help inspire you, and they will also be a way of our saying thank you to so many of you who live this way week in and week out, trusting God and others with your life. And you know what it means to have God's grace bountifully given to you and then expressed through you. You know that. You feel that. And we want to say thank you because you have been a part, so big a part, of a faith community that is stretching around the world. And we don't know where all it's working. You can't measure these kind of things. But when we come in touch with it, we want to share it with you. So we're going to do two of those this morning. First, it will be John Lynch joining Clint and Gina. Clint will do an interview with John. Clint and Gina Garman from Santa Paula, California. And then it will be Jeremy Affelt from San Francisco and Spokane sharing. And then we want one of those from out of state as well, Doug Houston, who is a True Face board member, to come up and kind of help us begin to close our time by offering us communion. It'd be a great thing. Now, last week we showed you a clip, and because many of you were on spring break and many are on spring break this week, we thought we'd show it again, and it would be a way of orienting you to the way that Clint and Gina think God is leading them to abundantly share his grace in California.
Hey friends, welcome to Garman's Pub. In 2009, the Garman family and the Lipper family came together to create a pub in the middle of Santa Paula to make a difference and change people's lives through hospitality. When making this plan to start in August 2008 over a pool game, we decided that we should do something different and we should open up a pub. From there, we started the process, and within 8 months, we were open, and we saw God show up with all through it, through the conversations, through the relationships, through the city of Santa Paula, and even the greater county. It's allowed us to do weddings and funerals and baptisms and just have fun with people over at a table. It's fantastic to see people's lives that have walked through this door, the broken, the under-resourced, the needy, those that think they have it all together, and just kind of throw their story on the table and let us kind of just spend time with them and become friends and hopefully go shoulder to shoulder and walk alongside. Whether it's over a pint or a Sprite or a big cookie or a fish and chips, our passion is to meet you where you're at. Look forward to spending time with you and sharing more of what we do here at Garman's Pub.
Well, it is a privilege to welcome Clint Garman. And will you welcome him?
Thank you.
And his wife, Gina, and she was Friday night, she kept taking the mic from him to correct the stories that he was messing up.
Amen.
Yeah. If you could understand the gift it is to have them here, you know that they run an Irish pub, and there was a holiday recently, and they were two staff members down, so they were bedraggled when they came into town. And we have had ourselves a weekend, and it has been an absolute gift to have you guys here. They are the real deal. Whatever you just saw up there comes from a conviction, a core conviction of Christ in them and love of strangers. Remember last week, we saw different than xenophobia, that we were to have xenophileo. Love of strangers. And this is one of those beautiful applications of hospitality that we're getting to watch. We first met Clint. Bruce was in Southern California speaking to some Foursquare churches, and Clint had just been starting to read some of our stuff and just found out an hour before that Bruce was going to be there and gathered up a group of friends and went down. And nothing's been the same since.
True.
I got the privilege Bruce sent me to get to go speak to this men's group that you have shepherded throughout the whole Ventura area. And we'd go up to Paso Robles. Just an incredible privilege to watch that. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions just to get a feel for what you're about. Garmin started about the same time you ran into Bose Cafe, the book, and just tell us how that fed off, confirmed, nurtured, guided, and taught you how to live this way of life at Garmin's.
Yeah, the beautiful thing is looking on Facebook and finding that Bruce is going to speak at 4 o'clock and it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon and tell my wife, I'm taking off to go hear this guy, Bruce. And she goes, who is this guy? And I go, it's True Face Guys. I'll see you later. And her just go, okay, I'll see you later. And running into Bruce at this church in Foursquare and him explaining, and I'd already been through the True Face material, and then him sharing Bose Cafe, and we're about to open up a pub, just affirmed what they were writing about and what we were hoping to do. So throughout the city of Santa Paul and throughout the greater county, and hopefully to be just an influence through through hospitality and through over through food and through a table.
It is incredible to hear the stories of baptisms, of weddings, of funerals, of everything taking place, other church services taking place in a pub, that it could have that kind of meeting ground to meet people where they truly are. I love, we all do, love the sign on the front that says Passion for God Guinness, right under Guinness. An earlier sign, Guinness, proof that God loves us.
Yeah, we had both signs up. It's been great.
One says Passion for God and people and conversations. So what is that on an ideal night? What does that look like?
Yeah, on any given time during the day or night, people will come through and they have no idea of my background except that I have a name on the outside and that we do Irish food.
Tell them your background. You are a pastor. Yeah.
So, yeah, I've been a pastor, associate pastor of Foursquare in the early 2000s, and until this last Tuesday just resigned as a men's pastor. So I've cared for men throughout Ventura City and the county for a while, and I've done a men's retreat where I take 175 guys up from Hell's Angels to doctors to lawyers to those that don't even know things of God, to just come up to a lake and listen to people like John for 2 years and be able to share grace, as you guys have all heard it, and we've all heard it up there. So it's been absolutely awesome. So to take guys up there and bring people up to share their stories and intertwine from all over the country has been absolutely amazing. So like I said, I'll go off on tangents all day, so you have to bring me back.
The first or second year that I was up there, he had me stay at the home of the largest porn distributor in America until he came to Christ through these guys. And now he is a man who lives for Jesus. And it is profound to watch the people who trust the currency of what you guys have done all these years. Just profound. You have recently... Gina called you up and said, we are going to buy a new home. And you moved into the neighborhood. This guy is a surf cat from Ventura and grew up by the beach, a block from the beach. And that has been his whole life. That's been his best friends. That's been everything around them. And Gina, too, and raised their kids. But this pub is in Santa Paula, and it's in a mixed environment, mixed neighborhood, mixed economics. And so tell what happened the other day and then take us into sideways a little bit.
Okay. So Ventura is right next, it's a beach town, 30 minutes south of Santa Barbara, hour north of LA. And Santa Paul is the next city over that's going east towards Magic Mountain, 126 to the 5. In this city, we had been praying. My buddy's been asking me to open, do something in Santa Paul for years, and we just were held off. And we went and prayed those streets for 2 years, and it was, as my wife would say, it was just crickets. Moms pushing their babies around. It's a mostly Hispanic community. And to bring me into an Irish pub into this community just makes absolutely no sense on paper. And yet it's exactly what we felt that God was telling us to do. And so as we opened up that pub, we felt that we were called to that city. Yet we still lived in Ventura. We were doing both, and our kids were in school in Ventura and still are, and we're trying to figure out how do we do this life. And we figured out the boundaries weren't just city boundaries. We were just going to live within these streets from Seaward to 10th Street in this 15-mile corridor and spending time with people there. from there, just recently, we've been praying, like, trying to open up a second restaurant, second pub to actually influence people. And that has been, it hasn't been able to happen. We've been pushing for it. It hasn't been able to happen. So my wife was like, well, maybe we need to look where we're going to live. So we started looking at different places to live that were outside of our comfort zone. And this last one we found was in Santa Paul. My wife calls me up, and I stayed home from work that day. I never stay home from work sick. And she just says, we're going to go look at this house, and the last thing I wanted to do. And yet we went up there, and we got up there, and it was absolutely peaceful. And the neighbor walked out next door to me, and he goes, Clint, is that you? I said, yeah. And he goes, hey, do you remember 2 years ago when I was in the pub and you gave me a bottle of wine for closing escrow? This is the house. And he goes, what are you doing here? And I go, we're actually looking at this house. He goes, man, if we got to be neighbors, that would be awesome. So these stories keep going through relationship, through baptisms, through people that we meet. I can go on and on. Sorry.
They every year ask him to run for mayor because they want him to be mayor of Ventura and now Santa Paula. This is one of the things just hastily got to put together. All of you have a seat on the bus. We're going to take a field trip right after second service out there. You guys, what we want to say to you is we are proud of you, and we stand with you, and we believe in you, and you represent us. And we know that what you're doing is risky and incarnational, and your dreams are to start businesses all over that bless and protect those who need and to show hospitality. So just can't keep telling you how much a hero you are to us, and just want to pray with you.
I'd be honored. Thank you.
Father God, thank you for this privilege. We've wanted them to come out for so many years and have this community get to meet them. And today you let it happen. And all we ask, Father, for this precious family that is moving now into Santa Paula, would you protect them, give them great joy, and let them love and be loved by this community and continue to do garments in magical ways that bless you, honor you, and show redemption. Oh, we give all this to you, Jesus. I know you smile so much. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you, Fred.
In a few minutes, you'll understand why John and I invited Bill Thrall to introduce Jeremy. But there he sits with Grace, and he's deferring. And you can bet that Jeremy is going to reverse introduce Bill during these next few minutes. In our estimation, Jeremy could have been a teaching pastor. He could have been a business entrepreneur. God has given him such gifts. But God also decided to give him a family and a temperament, a discipline, a competitiveness, and also an opportunity to learn how to throw a ball exceedingly well. Yeah. Yeah. And so God has used that platform to bring Jeremy into a lot of places. But as he did that, he also brought Jeremy into this understanding of what would Grace do in my life, in my marriage, in my family, in my clubhouse, in business, and in opportunities to care for others and love them wonderfully hard, to care for them when caring gets to be really tough. What's that like? And so, Jeremy, we love that you are here. Thank you for coming. And please bless us with this understanding of permission. In about 2 weeks, we'll get to protection, but today, permission.
Awesome, man. Thank you, man. Good morning. Yeah, that was way better. I was listening to one of the past messages when John asked for your morning. You guys didn't say anything, so I feel way, way blessed that I had a better. I was more received than he was. I'm pumped about that, man. That's great. That's great. I don't even try to fake Irish or Scottish or whatever. You know, I just say good morning. It's awesome. Well, thanks for having me. I've had an amazing weekend. You know, I'm going to get into my story a little bit and talk about permission because it's been a game changer for my family, for my life, for my friends and my children. But I'm very thankful that I got to come this weekend. I got to spend the past few days with the True Face team and the Hearts of Men team, just hearing all the different passions from people. And just last night, I told John this morning, I was like, I'm kind of wrecked. I'm supposed to speak on this, but my mind's still on last night. And I'm just having, you know, I just was in so much peace, and we had so much fun just hanging out yesterday, and we enjoyed a screening of The Hearts of Men, but then we went to John's house, and I just had so much fun, man. The community that True Face has provided for me to live in freedom and grace and understanding of what that means to meet people from the, you know, just all walks of life, man. I sat with everybody out on the porch last night, and we have pub owners that are changing people's minds in the world through Guinness and good scotch. We are meeting oil and energy groups and people that have almond business. Don't say almonds. Correction. Thank you. Almond businesses and just, man, what an awesome community that I got to hang with yesterday. It would never happen unless we had permission. It would never happen unless we understood the idea of permission. So it means a lot to me. I'm going to share with you, you know, quick. I just retired from Major League Baseball, 14 years in the major leagues, and it was awesome. I had an awesome opportunity to pitch on some really, really wonderful teams. I was a part of four different World Series, I was also a part of three World Series champions with the Giants the last few years, and I had a great time with that. But just felt like it was time to move on. I wanted to be with my family. I got three little boys, 8, 5, and 3, Walker, Logan, and Colt. I have a beautiful bride. Her name is Larissa. She shows horses, so she's in Vegas right now, dominating the horse world as we speak. She wishes she could be here. She just couldn't swing it. But there was a time for me this last spring where last September when I retired, the team allowed me to do a retirement speech. And that's not a common thing for a middle reliever, to be honest with you. The middle relievers are, hey, you're retiring, good. We have a guy, we need to replace you for cheaper. Get out. You know, that's kind of usually how it works, you know, with the middle relievers. We're not, you know, closers, we're not starters. And we're usually the guys that if we tank the game, it's our fault. And if we don't tank the game, it's the closer and the starters win and save, right? So we don't ever get credit for the win. We just get booed for the loss and ran out of town usually. So I was able to have an awesome opportunity to thank a few people. They brought my family out, all my family. Bill got to come out, and Bill's been a wonderful man for me and my wife. And Bill and Grace got to come out as they've impacted us so much. And in the short amount of time, the 3 years that I've known the True Face guys, and they just had to be there for me, because the reality of it was I was not going to be able to retire in the state I was in 3 years ago. Because if I would have retired 3 years ago, I would have been divorced in about 6 months. And 82% of athletes after they retire get divorced. Very high. And this is Christian, non-Christian, doesn't matter. They're divorced because baseball and sports, they save our marriages while we're playing, because we can disappear for 2 weeks on a road trip. We come home. By the time there's any kind of friction, we're gone again. We can hide a lot behind our sport. Athletes are very insecure people. And I'm sure a lot of athletes, if they were here, they would probably be mad at me for saying that. But we're almost all insecure because we deal with a lot of shame. If you see in the media, if you don't do well, they shame us constantly. ESPN makes fun of us, right? SportsCenter, they just talk about, you know, all they critique us nonstop, like we're robots and we're supposed to do everything perfect all the time. So we have this performance mentality. And so we sit there and we get guarded and we hide behind a lot of things. We get tough. You know, sometimes we don't reveal who we are. We don't let people in. I won't let you in because I don't trust you, because I don't trust people. One, I don't trust why you want to get to know me if you're on the outside of the game. And two, I don't trust the media because you're gonna blast me tomorrow. You might cheer me today, but tomorrow you're gonna tell me how bad I am. So I don't trust you because you're not safe. So we deal with a lot of these issues. The problem is that we take it home, and we're guarded at home, and we don't trust our wives. We don't trust our children. We're ashamed a lot of times if we don't come through. Even though we come home and our children, it's a freeing thing when your boys can run up to you and love that you're home, because they have no idea whether you pitched well or not. You still feel shame, and you feel like you don't come through, and you're worried about not having a job maybe because if you get released because you're not doing well. So there's all these things. And then you look at your wife and your wife, when you come home, here's a reality. Maybe some of you have, but here's my reality. I go to the field and it's like, Jeremy, give me an autograph. Jeremy this, Jeremy that. You're on TV pitching, cheering. Yeah, you're great. You're doing good. I come home and I look at my wife and I'm like, hey. And she's like, hey. Wait, what? Like, you know, I'm major leaguer, man. I just came home to the house. Like, what do you mean? Hey, you know, and it's like, why's the Leave It to Beaver day? Honey, I'm home. And the wife comes up when her, you know, with food done with a big hug, you know, like, hey, you know, it's like, hey man, I'm kind of hungry. She's like, food's in the freezer. Make it yourself. You know, like that doesn't work well with me, you know? And, man, I just had a hard time, dealing with that. And even though I knew that I didn't want to go there, there was just this deal with I just started not liking my wife. And I've been married 17 years coming November. And for 13 of it, I wounded my wife deeply. And I didn't know it. I had no idea. I thought it was all her fault because she wasn't respecting me because she didn't worship me when I came home and I was just Jeremy. You know, I was just Jeremy. It wasn't even, hey, honey, sometimes it was, hey, you know, we didn't even get the honey part, you know? So I ran into this. So we ran into this thing 3 years ago when I got, one of the things I got to do when I got to retire in September was I got to thank a lot of people, but three that I truly thanked were my wife, my children, and my teammates. And the reason those three people I was able to thank was because 3 years ago, my wife kicked me out in spring training. And it was years of basically just me just manipulating and verbally abusing my wife, telling her and running circles around her and blaming her and getting her to say sorry so I wouldn't have to, making her think it was all her fault and not mine. And she was, and I was getting so angry. I'd sit in my driveway and literally not want to go in the house because I didn't know what I was going to walk into because I was not enjoying my family. And I'm and in ways I am ashamed to say it, but in other ways you'll hear today I'm very transparent now, thanks to Bill, and the True Face team. I'm very vulnerable, and that's a scary place for me, and it's a scary place for most men, to be honest with you, because we don't want to be vulnerable because it makes us weak. But I can tell you I did not like my kids. I have three amazing boys, 3, 8, 5, and 3. This was not planned, by the way. I have three amazing boys, and I look at them now, and I'm like, how did I not like you? You know, like how I was talking to a few guys yesterday. I watch them sleep, and I'm like, I just don't understand how you cannot be liked. How did I get there? And I didn't like my wife, and I'm sure there's a lot of men in here that have ran that course. I just didn't enjoy her. I mean, it was just like, it was constant nagging. It was constant telling me I wasn't doing something right or all these different things. And I was trying to control everybody and I was trying to push them down. I was trying to control. And I was trying to say, you do what I do. You get in this little box. And if you stay here, I will be fine. If you get outside this box, I will get angry. And my wife constantly left the box. And if my wife was here today, she looks like a Viking warrior princess. I swear to God, like she does not stay in boxes well. Like it is not happening. So she kicked me out it was 4 years ago this spring. She kicked me out. I had a book coming out. I was a Christian leader on the team. I was very vocal in the Christian community. Everybody who heard me speak would go to my wife and say, man, amazing, how awesome it is to be married to your husband. And she would look at him and she goes, you have no idea, because he is not a good man. And she had a hard time trying to put on face because the whole time she was trying to protect me, and I never knew it, by not saying anything bad when she wanted to. And I was just not the husband that I was supposed to be, because I didn't understand who I was, and I didn't understand what it meant to have Christ in Jeremy, and I didn't understand what it meant to live a life of trust with my family and permission for my wife to love me, because I did not let her in. And I'm going to give you a scene. About 3 weeks into working with Bill, he asked me to do a very, very important thing, because I was out of the house for 3.5 weeks in spring training, and I had to tell two teammates, and I was so scared, but they're the only ones that could protect me. And I told him I was out of the house. I was living in the guest house. I had to deal with my son asking if he could spend the night with me, and I'm like, because he saw my luggage in the other room, And he said, can I come and just stay with you tonight, Dad? And I'm like, what are you talking? Because I would put my kids to bed, and then I'd have to go into the guest house. Because my wife had emotionally said, we are emotionally separated. We do not talk. You will be at the home. You can be around the kids, but I do not see you. I will not talk to you. And you will be invisible until you figure out a way to be what you need to be to me and to our boys. Because I will not let you terrify our boys anymore with your anger. And I will not let you control me by it. And so I would come into the house, and she would literally walk by me. I was invisible for 3 weeks. And Bill said, Jeremy, I need you to do a really important thing for me. I said, okay. I said, I need you to go to your wife and get on your knee and ask her to teach you how to be a husband. I said, Bill, there's no shot in hell that I'm going to go to my wife and ask this woman to teach me how to be a husband. She doesn't even know how to respect me. How am I going to ask this woman? And Bill says the thing that I'm sure if any of you met with Bill, he always says, is this on your terms or on ours? Because if it's on your terms, I can't help you. And I was tired of being in the guest house, to be honest with you. I was kind of scared a little bit. I didn't want to go back because I was kind of learning a lot, but I was kind of like, I want to function. I miss my boys. I miss my family. I miss functioning. I miss just being around a family because I truly had a heart for it. And it was my good intentions that I actually wounded my entire family. And he said, no. Yeah, I'm like, all right. So I go and I kneel before her and I say, I need you to teach me how to be a husband. And she was like, she lit up. She absolutely lit up. And the first time we talked and she said, I will absolutely do that. And she came to life and I was like, man, if I only knew it was that easy, I would have done that a long time ago. And I didn't understand what I was doing at that point in time. And I realized that I gave my wife permission to love me for the first time in 13 years. I gave her permission to affect my soul. And I gave her permission to just love me well. And in return, she had given me permission to be able to love back. Because now I felt alive. Because I could be free again, free for the first time ever. But I was sitting there, I was like, I don't understand this because this concept doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Because I'm like, I don't understand how permission can bring trust and vulnerability. I don't understand why is that so important. Because if Jesus is our ultimate leader, if he was it, I'm like trying to figure out if I'm supposed to follow Jesus. And that's what I thought I was doing. When I was trying to do Ephesians 5 and I was trying to love my wife like Christ loved the church, I skipped through all that to where women respect their husbands. You know, that's kind of where I focused, you know, in that area. So I was like, yeah, women respect your husbands. I'm going to pound that home, right? And the whole submit to one another, it was like, eh. I like the more submit, wives be submissive concept more than the submit to one another deal. But I was like, so Jesus, I don't understand. Like, I'm trying to get my wife to submit to me. Like you got to help me out here, man. Like, this is your gig. And I started to ask, like, does Jesus ask permission? He never asked permission, right? Like, the guy just tells you, like, you're in or out. Like, you either accept this, you're in or out. He didn't get permission. Like, I don't understand that. Like, I was starting to think, does Jesus ever ask permission to love me? And yes, he does. In Revelation 3:20, he says, I stand at the door and I knock. And if you let me in, I will change your life. But he does not kick that door down. This is the man that sees our entire life from the beginning to the end. He is God in human flesh. He died. He did everything, took our shame. Bill said it yesterday at a meeting. It was amazing. He said he died naked because it's the most shameful way you can die, to take our shame. And yet he does not ever do anything without permission. That transformed me. Because I've never heard that. I've never viewed it like that. I've seen the picture in the churches, right? All the Baptists have it, right? The picture of Jesus and holiness. And he's knocking on a door, right? But they don't ever give the understanding of, like, no, this man who is God and can do anything he wants says, no, may I come in and change your life. But until you open that door, I will not come in. I need permission. Because when you give me permission, you open up and you trust. And I have learned to trust God because I gave him permission. But I did not understand that that is actually something that we have to do in our relationships. I didn't understand that Christ in me allows me to give permission in my vulnerability, my shame, and my sinfulness for someone to love me and protect me. Because in my shame and in my sinfulness, I wanted to wear masks that I was holy and I was good and I was perfect. And all the other guys on my team, they treated their wives bad. They cheated on their wives. They go do all these sinful things. And it's like, man, I could really help them. And I remember I was encouraging. I was helping them with their families. And I was helping their marriage. I had a really strong friend on the team. He came up to me when he found out that I had been kicked out. And he said, Jeremy, I have a guest house. I live two doors down from you. You can stay there if you want. He goes, but I got to tell you something. I don't know if this is going to help you. But he goes, if you're getting kicked out, we have no hope. And I'm like, God, no, that didn't help me. It really didn't. And he's like, but you got to be honest, man. I thought you were it, man. I was asking you for marriage advice, and all of a sudden you're getting kicked out of your home. And I said, I know, man, but I'm not everything that I'm adding up to be, because in my shame and in my behind closed doors, I became someone that no one else saw because I was scared. And I didn't know how to be a dad, and I didn't know how to be a husband. And the only way I could do things is to control, because athletes are control freaks. We control our destiny. As a pitcher, nobody does anything until I throw a ball. I decide what pitch I throw. I decide when I throw it and where I throw it. And I decide how I get ready for a game. And a lot of times in the games that I pitched in, I help decide whether we won and lost by the pitches that I made. So I take that home. And I say, no, I decide how my wife is supposed to act. I decide how my children are supposed to be. I decide on how you represent my family. Not our family, my family. You took my last name. And that's how I acted. Because I thought that's how it's supposed to be. And my parents, man, they loved me. And they were awesome parents. And they did the best they could. But that's how it was run. And it affected me. And it wounded a lot of people around me. By living in a military home where it was yes sir, no sir. It was my way or the highway. It was like, don't ask questions. Don't ask why. I'm dad and I told you so. And I've talked with my dad about this. So I'm not bad mouthing him behind his back. He knows. And I did not know how to do it. And my wife said, I've had enough. Get out. And then I sit there and I start reading Ephesians 5. I'm gonna sin and use my iPhone Bible and read it, because I actually really like the Message Bible on this. And I'm sure people have all kinds of reasons why not to like the Message Bible. I happen to love the Message Bible when it comes to this verse, because this is something that I've been really working hard on. And I speak tonight, and I'm a little nervous. The reason I get more nervous here is because I'm living this. I don't know this stuff. I don't walk this like I know what I'm doing. I'm actually living the idea of permission right now. I just know that it's changing my marriage, it's changing my son's lives, it's changing the way I do relationships, and I'm seeing people thriving. And in Ephesians 5:21, it says, out of respect for Christ, be courteous and reverent to one another. Wives, understand and support your husbands in ways that show your support for Christ. The husband provides leadership to his wife the way Christ does to his church, not by domineering, but by cherishing. So just as the church submits to Christ as he exercises such leadership, wives should likewise submit to their husbands. Husbands, go all out in your love for your wives, exactly as Christ did for the church, a love marked by giving, not getting. Christ's love makes the church whole. His words evoke her for beauty. Everything he does and says is designed to bring the best out of her, dressing her in dazzling white silk, radiant with holiness. And that is how husbands ought to love their wives. They're really doing themselves a favor since they're already one in marriage. No one abuses his own body, does he? No, no, he feeds and pampers it. That's how Christ treats the church, since we are his body of his Christ. And this is why a man leaves father and mother and cherishes his wife. No longer two, they become one. That is an amazing thing. That when I read that, I did not adore my wife. I did not provide for my wife so that she would feel beauty. I did not provide the atmosphere so that she could be free, because I controlled, because I did not run the marriage based on giving, but I ran it based on getting. and you do this, you get me. You get my love, but not until you respect me. And I controlled that woman, and I wounded her deeply. And I ask forgiveness for a lot of things all of the time, because I am so sorry to her for not giving her permission to love me and to let her in so that I might see her for who she really is, an amazing woman. Flawed? Yeah, but she's amazing. And giving permission to love, to let your wives love you, is exactly what Christ did to the church when he said, I stand at the door and knock. And if you let me in, that trust will be established. And I never let my wife in. I never opened a door. I asked her permission to love her, even though I think she just naturally does that. I think that's why I wounded her so deeply, because I think she trusted me and I failed her so much by how I talked to her and how I treated her. And I thought that me being the head of the family was, I'm going to dominate the family. You do what I say. And instead of stewarding my family, I controlled my family. And now that I'm on this new journey, I've retired. Interesting that this comes up, but I've retired from Major League Baseball, and I got to thank my wife. And when I thanked my wife, I thanked her because I said, thank you, because our career was awesome. Not my career, our career. But she reminded me who I was so many times throughout my career, and I never respected it. I only disrespected her because she didn't remind me who I was at times. And she didn't treat me like I thought I was supposed to be treated in this awesome Major League World Series hero type way. And man, when I asked her to teach me how to be a husband and gave her permission to love me, my life changed. And I saw her differently. And I was free because I could just, she looked at me and says, Jeremy, I know you're not going to be perfect. I know you're going to fail. But I still love you, and you've got to know that I'm going to fail, and I'm not going to be perfect, and I'm not going to do everything right, but I still need to be loved, because we are saints that sin. We are not sinners that are saved, and we are going to be saints, and I've got 5 saints in my family. I got me, my wife, and my 3 boys that are all going to be saints. They're saints, but they're going to sin, and you cannot hold us to a standard that we can't add up to. Give us permission to love you, and give us permission to also fail. And man, I've done that. And now we are now as a retired, her and I are retired, and our biggest transitional issue right now is we don't have a plan. I'm 36 years old with 3 little boys, and I don't have a plan. Most people, when they retire, are like 60. Well, Bill's going to be like 100, you know, when he retires, you know. And you know, he doesn't even have a plan. And when he retires, he's on his way up. That's the deal, right? So you know, I got a lot of life left to live, you know. And so I'm like, I'm supposed to be walking something that like not many people do right now. And so now I'm scared a little bit. Not scared that I'm not playing. It was the right decision. Scared because I don't know what's next. Now here's the deal that I'm dealing with. Now I'm dealing with baseball was this. You at February 14th, you show up for spring training. You stay here for 6 weeks. April 1st, 2nd, 3rd, or 4th, depending on the year, your season starts. You go to October. If you're in the playoffs, October, then you're in the playoffs till it's over. That was the plan. There was no ifs, ands, or buts. There was no voice. My wife didn't have one. This is what we do. Nothing else. You can't have it now. I don't have a plan, and my wife has a loud voice in what we get to do. And I don't know. I'm like, well, wait a minute. It freaks me out. Whoa, time out. Because now it's like, yeah, you have to be even more of a team. And now that 2 becomes 1 is so important. And permission for your wife to speak into your life is even more important. And if I wouldn't understand what it meant to be able to open myself up and say, these are my flaws, these are my failures, these are my issues, I need you to help me be a husband and a father. Tell me how I'm wounding my children. Show me how my tone is an issue. Show me how I when I react to things, how it hurts you. Tell me how I'm affecting you. Before, I didn't give her permission to tell me that. Don't tell me how I'm affecting you. I don't care how I'm affecting you. Just do what I say. Now I'm hearing her heart. And now I'm looking and I'm saying, man, I know you're talking about protection a few weeks, but permission allows me to protect my wife. And it allows her to protect me. This whole, like, pecking order thing doesn't make sense to Jesus. It doesn't. The two become one flesh. He created a helpmate. You're to be a servant to your family because Jesus said, I died. I did the ultimate servant sacrifice and I died. And I love you. And Bill addressed a very important question to me in this time when I was understanding permission. He said, Jeremy, why do you love God? And I said, do you want the Christian answer? Or he's like, just tell me. I'm like, well, I mean, obviously, because he first loved us. You know, that's it, right? That's the verse. And he just stared at me. And I stared back, and it was an awkward staring match. Because I think he was waiting for me to get it. And I looked at him, and I went, oh, yeah, I think I messed that up. And he's like, well, if you didn't mess it up, we weren't meeting. You obviously messed it up, right? We're, you know. I said, yeah, good point. You know, and I got it. I love God because he first loved me. My wife is not going to respect me. I'm not going to love my wife when she respects me. My wife's going to respect me when I first love her. When I take initiative to serve my wife. When I take initiative to give permission for my wife to speak into my life and to have a voice. The respect will come. And that is a big priority for me. Respect in the home is huge. When my wife disrespects me in front of people or talks down to me or my sons, it causes me to sometimes react. It's a nerve for me. And it was never stopping, and I was continuing to be disrespected, and I was continuing to be angry at my wife. And then I realized, I was like, respect me and I'll love you. And no, it's the other way around. Love her and she'll respect you. Provide the environment for her to have respect. You set the tone. And the only way to set the tone is to give your family permission. And ask permission from your wife to be able to speak into her life and to steward her. The permission goes both ways. And my children, the next chapter in Ephesians, I got to thank my children because I got to come home. And my three boys are amazing. My oldest son understands grace more than anything I've ever thought I could ever learn from this boy. Like he kind of goes too far. A lot of times when he messes up, he's like, what about grace, Dad? Right, right, right. I understand that we're working on that, son, but you're using that a little bit too much here, buddy. And one time I got into it and I said, son, I might be messing up, but you know what? Grace is out right now. You used it all up, right? I get controlling and I'm like, you know what? You're right. Grace ended at 5 p.m. Go to your room, you know, type thing. But you know, Ephesians 6, it says, children, do what your parents tell you. This is only right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment. The promise is attached to it, namely. So you will live well and have a long life. Fathers, do not exasperate your children by coming down hard on them, but take them by the hand and lead them in the way of the master. Fathers, do not drive your kids to anger. And I'm going to tell you, man, what I was doing is I would yell at my kids when they didn't do what I want them to do, and I try to control them, and they would get so angry, and they'd yell back, and then we'd react, and we'd have a yelling match. And here's this 33-year-old man having a yelling match with a 5-year-old son, and a lot of times the son would win because he's a very good communicator, and he'd win arguments, and it would make me mad because I just lost to a 5-year-old, right? And I would get angry, and he would get mad, and he would sit there, and he wouldn't do what I'm telling him to do, and I'm like, why aren't you doing? And I would just push him. I would always push him, and I'd tell him to stop crying. And I would tell him to quit whining. And I would tell him to quit being a sissy. I'd tell all my boys that. And then when I'd start to use tone with my son and I'd start to get a deep, deep, deep voice, I'd tell my wife to say, it's tone. You're using tone. And I'm like, it's zeal. Right? That's what it is, honey. I'm just passionate. She's like, no, you're angry. I'm like, no. I'm just zealous for my son to do what I want him to do. Right? I'm trying to use the Hollywood voice of God, you know? I would push them, and they would never listen. And my son, he would start to shake and cower, and he would, and it's like he didn't hear me. And that was one of my issues. I thought my children, they weren't listening, they weren't obeying, they weren't respecting me because they weren't not listening to me. And then in my other, in my 7,000th meeting with Bill, he said, Jeremy, they're not listening to you. They're scared because you're trying to get them to obey you out of fear. You're not loving them. You're not leading them. You're dictating them. And when you don't create an avenue of trust and vulnerability and transparency in your home, when you don't create the environment that allows your sons to trust your voice, they will obey you out of fear. And you will get what you want, but they will not like you. And then you will wonder why they're having a hard time with the first part of that verse where it says, children, obey your parents. Because you did the latter part wrong. And you stirred your sons and some of your daughters to anger. And you're going to wonder why, at 16 years of age, they don't like you. Oh, they obeyed you eventually, and you got what you wanted out of them. But now they don't like you, and they don't love you, and they don't respect you. They just do what they're told out of fear. And then when they leave your house, they do exact opposite, and they dishonor you. And I don't want my sons to dishonor me. I want them to understand what it means to love their dad out of respect. And so I had to learn to give permission to my children, and I had to actually get permission for my children. And that was a humbling thing for me because I was raised in a home like, wait a minute, I'm dad. I don't have to have permission to talk to you. And you know what? That didn't work for me. And a lot of people think that. Like, you can be dad. You don't have to ask permission to talk to your 8-year-old son. They should just listen to you. It's authority. They need to respect you. And I can get whatever I want off my chest, and I can yell at them and scare them to death. But it does nothing but wound my children. And so now I actually go up to them. And I say, may I have permission to speak with you? Because when they grant that, they calm down and their hearts open up. And they receive whatever I need them to receive. And they receive it and honor it and respect it. Not say yes because they're scared they're going to get a spanking, or yes because their iPads are going to get taken away, or yes because they're going to go to their room. My oldest son hates being in a room by himself. Hates it. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't say yes to that. When I get to speak to him, when I ask permission to each of my sons to talk, even my 3-year-old, it's amazing. My 3-year-old freaks out, screams, yells, be it stubborn, does what 3-year-olds do. He puts himself in time out. It's awesome. Like, you know, I looked at him the other day and I said, son, you need to stop. And he's like, I'm going to my room. I'm like, please don't. Please. You know, he goes in there and he thinks he's punishing us, right? Like going to his room. And he's sitting in his room, and he's sitting on his bed, and his hands are folded, and he's sitting there just staring at the ground. And I'll go in there, and I'll be like, hey, son, can I talk to you? And he goes, no. All right. I said, well, you're going to stay in your room. But when you're ready, I would like to talk with you. And I'll come back in 5 minutes. Said, okay. So I walk out. I come back in 5 minutes, and he looks at me and said, do I have permission to speak to you now? He said, yes. I said, son, I just don't want you yelling at your mom like that. You got to love your mama. And he's like, okay, daddy. And I said, can you do me a favor? Yeah, can you go give your mom a big hug and just tell her you're sorry because you know you did something wrong. He's like, okay. And he gets up and runs out. I didn't have to yell at him. You know, all my sons, my 8-year-old, man, he freaks out. He's emotional. He's sensitive. I don't tell him to stop crying. I say, you know what? If you want to cry, fine. Show your emotion. I give you permission to show emotion. Go ahead. I'm not going to control your emotions, but do it in your room because, you know, I'm watching a movie and disrupting, you know. You know? So, he goes to his room. I walk in 5 minutes, and I say, may I speak with you? And my son, over the course of time, has learned, what permission is. He trusts it now. Now my 8-year-old doesn't say no as much as my 3-year-old because he's been raised a little longer in it, but now he says yes. And I said, okay. And I get down on my knee, and I look at him. I said, I just want to tell you what you do and how you affect people when you talk to them like that. And he understands it. And then he kind of says, I feel bad, Dad. And I said, you know what? There's no shame in this family. You're going to mess up. Daddy still messes up. I'm 36, son. And if I'm messing up, I can't expect you to be perfect. I talk to your mom in ways that are not good, and I've done it in the past. And I get really, and that's where I feel really bad sometimes too. I feel like my son yells at his mom because it's like he saw how I treated her.
And I'm really, really fearful that I wounded my son, and I didn't want my sons raised, and I don't want them to carry that into their marriages. I want them to see what it means to love their bride and love her well, no matter what, and speak kindly and encouraging. And I've messed that up so much, but I tell my sons how they affect when they do stuff, and they get it. And man, it's been a great time with my kids. My kids, they listen. My son, I'm just seeing him now, my 8-year-old. I just had to ask him. He's like, Dad, I don't even want to ask because I know you're going to say no. So you're going to ask? He's like, I kind of want to. All right. He's like, can I watch a movie? It's 9 o'clock at night, son. Yeah. No. Okay. Yeah. You know? But he's just like, okay. I mean, it's great. Like, it was not an argument. It's not. We just have a great conversation. And he can express himself because I've asked permission to speak with him. And I've given him permission. I said, son, anytime I'm not doing something that you think is right, you may talk to me about it. Do not be afraid of that. I will not be the dad that says you can't do that. I will love you. I need you to show me how to be a dad. And man, it's been amazing. And I'll end it with this. The last one I got to thank were my friends. And in Proverbs, it says there are friends that are closer than brothers. And that is what permission will do. When you give permission for other people to love you and love you well, you will have friends that are closer than brothers and sisters. You will. I sat with a bunch of people last night that within 4 hours, I can literally call them my brothers and sisters because I gave them permission just to love me for who I am immediately because I trust the environment in which I'm in. And that's community in its finest form. The only way that you're going to get community and the only way that you can love your wife correctly and the only way that you can love your children correctly is to give them permission to love you and to ask permission for you to be able to love them. And that creates a great environment of trust. And when you can have that, you will thrive and grace will be abounding and there will be so much life in vulnerability, but there will be so much messiness that will be able to be worked out because there is no judgments. And now we have that kingdom come that will be done on earth as it is in heaven, executed within our communities. I appreciate the time. Thank you very much.